Hello and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. And it's exactly 30 years since the former Beatle John Lennon was shot dead outside his apartment in New York City. Luis Hidalgo has been speaking to DJ Andy Peebles, who interviewed John Lennon just before he was killed.
We come along on Saturday morning, greeting everybody with a smile.
Johnny, what's that?
Okay, we're on, are we?
All right.
John and Yoko, it is more than wonderful to be able to talk to you after a very, very long time. We've been reminiscing just before the tape started rolling.
Right.
And, John, you've been talking about Saturday Club, so the memory is still working.
Oh, the memory is very, very good. It gets better when you get older, actually. It gets more clear.
December the 6th, 1980. A Saturday, late afternoon. And in a recording studio in New York City, a young British music journalist, Andy Peebles, is at last beginning the interview that he and his producer have flown across the Atlantic for.
We arrived at 5:50 and they were there, and we walked in and John turned round and I can still see him. Jeans, a skinny ribbed black sweater, I think a pair of glasses, hair moderately swept back. It was almost a mullet style, actually, funnily enough, and there he was. And he put his hand out and said, "Thank you so much for coming. Can I ask you to have a listen to what we're playing?" Which was called Walking on Thin Ice, and Yoko was doing the vocals, and it was something that they'd mixed the night before.
In 1980, John Lennon was one of the most famous musicians on the planet. Now 40, he was living in New York with his wife of 11 years, Yoko Ono, and his five-year-old son, Sean. It was an interview that Andy Peebles had dreamed of. Andy then worked for the BBC music station Radio 1, and he hoped, if he was lucky, that this interview with John and Yoko would last an hour. In fact, it lasted 3 hours and 20 minutes.
There was this massive outpouring of nostalgia and memories from John.
Listening through to the interview, he's very funny, very warm, very relaxed, very normal, as it were, and quite self-deprecating.
He'd come through that period, hadn't he, in Los Angeles, which he described as the mad weekend or whatever it was, where he'd indulged himself in excesses of alcohol and drugs. He'd gone to the stage where he got so stoned that he apparently had jumped out of a car doing 50 miles an hour, landed obviously on the roadside. And that was well and truly over his shoulder by the time we met. But he'd been there and done it. The man who presented himself in front of me was somebody who was on a macrobiotic diet, whose sense of humour was sharp as any razor blade you could purchase.
As you sit here in New York on this day, watching English television programmes, do you ever get the itch to think, oh, it'd be nice to go back and have a look?
Oh, yeah, you know, but as I always say to any Englishman I meet, most English people I meet are expatriates. You know, I mean, as I was saying off stage before, I've been to Singapore, Hong Kong, Cape Town, Johannesburg, and all points east and Caribbean and Pacific places where, you know,
colonies.
Noel Coward and Somerset Maugham and all that, those people that I like to read and read about were. And so, as Churchill said, it's the Englishman's inalienable right to live where the hell he likes. And as I say to an Englishman, I say, well, don't you get homesick and come back? I say, what do you think? It's going to vanish? It's not going to be when I want to go back?
He's very English at heart, you know. And, I mean, just this morning, he was just looking at this book and selling. It was just this coincidence because, you know, we're meeting you now and, you know, this all very English thing. And he saw this Liverpool in this book and he started choking up.
What was your sense of him as a man at a certain stage of his life?
Hmm.
He was now settled in New York, married to Yoko Ono with a small child. Did you get a sense of a man at ease with himself, content with where he was?
I got a sense of a man madly in love with his wife, and they'd had problems. He'd had the affair, of course, with May Pang, which became very public eventually. He adored his son, absolutely worshipped young Sean. I think he was immensely happy, and his eyes sparkled, and I can close mine now. I keep saying it 30 years on. I can still see him looking at me and smiling and laughing. And he seemed very passionate about life. You've got to remember that Double Fantasy, the album which they had just released, was the first thing he'd recorded for quite a number of years. So it was very important to him. So, yeah, I thought he was in fantastic shape. You know, he was here, there and everywhere. That's a Beatles song title, isn't it? And as an interviewee, I think he gave me probably three of the greatest hours I've had in 37 years of broadcasting.
The interview covered everything. How being in the Beatles had become like a 9-to-5 job, and that was why he'd left. How he and Yoko Ono had met. Why he stopped writing music for several years. How he loved being a house husband, looking after Sean. And he talked about the future, too.
Do you feel now at this stage, here we are in December 1980, that the team and the ease of writing is now back with you? And
yes.
And that you're going to be extremely prolific in the months and years to come?
Yes, I think it's going to be at one period they'd say, those two would do anything for publicity, for Christ's sake, get them off the front page, you know, get them out. People are bitching at us because we were always doing something, and then they were bitching at us because we weren't doing anything. And I have a funny feeling that it's going to be the other way around again, because we're talking and talking and talking, and we already got half the next album, and we'll probably go in just after Christmas and do that. And we're already talking about what the idea of the third album is already laid out, and I can't wait, you know. So it's a matter of just getting it done. And I'm sorry about you people that get fed up of hearing about it, but, you know, we like to do it, so it's too bad.
John was just brilliant. They ordered a Chinese meal, which went cold on the table on the other side of the studio, because John wouldn't stop. We had breaks when we changed the reels of tape. I think John smoked a cigarette. He was smoking French Gauloises cigarettes at the time. And then we carried on. After we'd finished, we went to Mr. Chow's restaurant, which is on the west side in New York, and it's down in a well below street level. And we walked to the top of the stairs, and everybody, and I mean everybody, in the restaurant turned round to look at this great star standing at the top of the stairs. And John put his arm round me, and he leant into my ear, and he said, just look at that lot. They're all going, who on earth's that with Andy Peebles?
It was later, on that Saturday evening, 7 hours after they first met, that Andy Peebles finally said goodbye to Yoko Ono and John Lennon.
And he said to me, I really look forward to seeing you when we come to Britain, and I promise you I will bring my guitar and I will play live on your programme. And he shook hands and he said, that is a deal and I'm really looking forward to it. We interviewed David Bowie on Sunday. We flew back to England at 7 o'clock. On the Monday evening, Mark Chapman pulled the gun and shot him at 10:45 on the same evening. And we got back to Britain and heard the news.
The shooting happened just before 11 o'clock on Monday night, as the Lennons came back from their recording studios.
And then I heard 4 or 5 shots. I heard a woman screaming. It was Yoko. She was screaming, help me.
How did you find out what had happened while you'd been in midair across the Atlantic?
I phoned my mother, told her I was back safely. At the same time, my producer phoned his wife, and Roz, Paul Williams' wife, told Paul that John had been shot. And Paul turned to me. We had 2 telephone booths at Heathrow. And he said, John's been shot. And I said, Paul, don't be ridiculous. What are you talking about? And he said, he's dead, and dropped the phone.
Mark Chapman, the man who shot John Lennon that night outside his apartment block, is still serving a life sentence for his murder. Across the road from where John Lennon lived and died, there's now a memorial garden in Central Park called Strawberry Fields. Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields forever.
For details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.